love. I don't get enough of it.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
where we talk everything Kanye West.
I'm Chris.
I'm Travis, and today we have a very special episode. Instead of covering a song by Kanye, we're going to interview somebody in his journey with Kanye West. His name is Jordy Sean Johnson of Fifth Opinion. Hey. The podcast Fifth Opinion.
Yes.
And we're going to hear your story.
I feel like you built me up that people are going to think like I've actually been on a journey with Kanye West, and this is going to be really disappointing.
You have been.
A personal one. Not literally.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all in the marketing, right?
Yeah.
It's they click thinking somebody took a road trip with Kanye West, and then they find out that it's just a guy who sat there listening to Kanye.
I actually did have a road trip where I listened to every single Kanye West song in a row, and it was pretty fantastic.
Sounds good to me.
That sounds beautiful.
I remember Jordan making fun of me for that, actually.
I did. I regret it. You should not bring that up anymore.
This was in your pagan days?
Yes. Dark times.
Well, before we get into your journey, we have some Jay-Z news that we want to go over.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't be a podcast if we weren't discussing, you know, this crazy shit Jay-Z's doing. The other day, he tried out a new hand cream, and he's actually considering switching brands, though.
Ah, that's huge. I wonder who's going to get the endorsement.
Yeah, it's pretty coveted prize to be the official hand cream spokesman for Jay-Z.
Spokesman,
yeah.
Whatever.
That'd be good.
Well, my news is it turns out that Jay-Z had ice cream for the first time ever.
For the first time ever?
For the first time ever, Jay-Z had never had ice cream.
That's crazy.
I know. He was really skeptical of the chocolate vanilla strawberry combination that was presented to him. But he discovered that it was incredible, that the flavors, instead of combating one another, actually dance on the palate very well.
I do actually agree with that.
Yeah. But the story has a tragic ending, as Jay-Z got brain freeze for the first time as well, and has since sworn off ice cream forever.
Wow. Just like that.
Just like that.
That's fucking crazy.
That's a dramatic turnaround.
Yeah. He's treating it like a rap beef or something. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It was good while it lasted. And Jordan, we're told you have some Jay-Z news.
Wow. Yeah. I was actually sitting next to him on a plane the other day.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he just slept, though. I didn't get to talk to him.
Oh, so your news is he slept on a plane.
He did.
That's pretty cool.
What, did he...
So you were, like, first class.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's the only way to do it.
He didn't, like, put his head on your shoulder or anything. He, kept his face. Is there any part of, like, juicy gossip there?
I wanted to put mine on his, but, you know, I figured that was inappropriate.
True. I bet it would be hard and rocky like a boulder, where Kanye's shoulder is probably very soft and pillowy.
Wow.
Wowzers.
Well, so that does it for the Jay-Z news section.
So yeah, we're going to do what we came here to do, which is interview Jordan about Kanye West.
And his story.
Oh, God.
So let's start off with the first question, very basic. Which albums have you listened to?
Oh, all of them. Of course.
Okay, good.
Including the bootlegs?
No, not including bootlegs.
Well, don't say you've listened to all the albums. I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I don't even think I've listened to the bootlegs.
And which of them is your favorite so far?
Oh, Yeezus, no doubt. Not even close.
We may or may not agree with that. We'll have to wait 3 years to find out, probably.
Yeah, I don't know how much you guys want to get into stuff, songs you haven't covered, but, you know, I'm sure it'll come up.
We'll probably get into it. We're fine.
Yeah, we're going to... We'll eventually get into discussing specific songs with you.
Okay.
But,
I say that like I'm surprised, like I have no knowledge of that.
Well, what? What? So
song analysis.
Do you remember the first time you heard Ye? Or the first time you hear Ye?
I do, actually. Which was when the trailer for Jarhead came out in 2005 and Jesus Walks was in it.
I remember that trailer.
Yeah, great trailer.
Wow.
Probably I know the trailer better than the movie.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, that's pretty great. And then it was just a long, long dark road before Ye reemerged in my life.
Didn't Kanye play in the trailer for like Wolf of Wall Street or something?
Oh, that's right, he did.
Power or something?
Yeah, it was Black Skinhead.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I didn't know it at the time, though.
Holy shit.
He was also in the Great Gatsby trailer.
That's right.
That's right, yeah. Nice. You know, the funny thing is, at the theater that I go to a lot, they play, like, you know, those pre-show commercials, and there's, like, an ad for, like, a touchpad or something like that, and Black Skinhead, the music, would play all the time. And I just, after I actually listened to the album, I thought it was funny that, like, this ad was using a song called Black Skinhead for their product the entire time. Not that funny, but, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, like, what did you originally think of him? Like, if you heard Jesus Walks, like, were you impressed? Was there anything about him that, like, drew you in?
I liked Jesus Walks at the time. And that was, like, the only song of his I had for years. And I liked that song, and then I just kind of lost track with it. And then I think for a long time I got kind of... I fell into the same camp I think a lot of people do, which is just really stupid and not understanding him. And it was, yeah, it just, you know, there's that whole reticence to, you know, let him in. I don't know. Because, you know, I think his persona is so huge and it makes you feel kind of standoffish at first.
Right. Yeah. Especially, like, a lot of people, I think, are shocked. They either don't understand the context of things they've heard him say, like, right. With him talking about how his job is as dangerous as, like, police officers.
Right.
Like, he wasn't trying to say that. He was just trying to say, like, there's a risk of getting injured that's present in performing on the stage that he does.
Sure.
That isn't there for, like, an office worker. But that with, like, the George Bush stuff and the Taylor Swift stuff, a lot of people just tend to think of him as a generic asshole with no talent rather than somebody that actually has reasons for doing what he does.
Right. You know, actually, come to think of it, before I got into him, there was one other little blip where somewhere I used to work, someone was listening to Runaway, and I'd never heard the song. And I was only hearing the instrumental part, like the last 4 or 5 minutes of the song.
Yeah.
And I was just, I heard it and I was kind of blown away. I was like, what the hell is this? And I asked him, he looked at me like I was an idiot and said it was Kanye West. yeah. And then you hear the song. And again, without like the context of his whole thing, just hearing him, you know, just like, you know, say things like a toast for the douchebags and stuff is a difficult entry point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that whole part on Runaway where it just slips into, like, kind of auto-tune-y, like, and he fades into the song, sort of, it still blows my mind that he achieved something. Like, it's just content meeting form, and it's just the music kind of overtakes it and becomes, like, part of the emotion of, like, what he's expressing. It's crazy good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, and it also plays into the idea, like, you could view it also as the girl that he's speaking to in the song getting a distance from him, or us, the listener, getting distance from him to where we actually are running away from this sort of cycle that he puts you through of, like, being an asshole and then, like, being vulnerable and bringing you back in. It really is a beautiful moment of, like, form meeting narrative in music,
right.
Which I don't think you get all that often.
And also, I mean, on top of that too, even as somebody, you know, who isn't going to get, like, some of that thematic stuff, just like an unbelievable section of musicality too, where just all the baggage from Kanye and the lyrics and everything just falls away. And it's like, how can you not appreciate just, you know, the music that he's doing. I think the only thing in speaking to other people, that tends to be a hang-up is the autotune stuff, but, you know, that's a hurdle you got kind of got to get over once you start getting into him.
You have a whole album of hurdles to get over with that. Like, right. Is all of that.
Which I think is, I think listening to that album is kind of, I think that part of that whole album's point is to make people clear that hurdle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think a big part of 808s is trying to sell the legitimacy of autotune as like an emotional and musical tool, which I think he absolutely does.
Yeah. Part of me wonders though, like, we'll get into 808s, I guess, but it's the only album to me that sounds in between like stages for him.
Right.
Like, I feel like he has such a clear and distinctive vision on most of his, well, at least Graduation going forward. I guess we've talked about like College Dropout, how it's like kind of random. But I still feel like there's a defiance to him that's going on, and 808's, like, I guess sonically and, like, musically, like, it feels to me like an experiment more than, like, something he's grasped. Like, I like the autotune way more on, like, My Beautiful Twisted Dark Fantasy and Jesus, like, the way he utilizes it and how it means something in different contexts and everything. I don't know. I still have trouble getting the 808 sometimes, even though I like it more than I used to.
I think it's, I think there's something to be said for using it as a way of sort of distancing himself and the emotion from himself. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Where you're not just listening to Kanye. You're listening to Kanye through this filter. There's like a barrier between you and his, his just regular human voice that I think is thematically appropriate for, like, all the, like, heartbreak and, just heartbreak themes of that album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I adore that album. That was the album that got me into Kanye. So when we start discussing songs in that album, by the end of it, you're either going to agree or hate me, but
I think I'll agree mostly on, like, individual songs. There are some songs in there I know I don't like as much as you, but I think as a whole is where I'll have to be sold on it. Maybe going song by song will help me out a lot more. It's the only one I haven't been able to grasp as a whole, I think.
Yeah. It definitely has my least favorite songs from his discography, but I still love it, and I still think it's fascinating and has also some of his best songs at the same time.
Yeah, I think, Jordan, what you were saying about how the autotune plays into the emotion and creating, like, a not Kanye, but this, like, embodiment of Kanye's emotion is, like, a really interesting aspect of the album,
right.
Especially as the album as a work of catharsis for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Well, when did he finally click for you? Like, what year was it? What was it that happened? Like,
okay.
Walk us through that story, eh?
Never gonna get old.
Oh, God. Okay, so, well, I'm actually a pretty recent Kanye-vert. I actually got into him. I've really only been into him for about a year, maybe just over, right around there. So this is all pretty new. I think it was just the sort of accumulation of hearing all of this stuff about him, hearing so many different opinions and so much praise and all, the constant, talk of him being a genius. And just wanting to understand why people are saying that. Because, I'd only heard, like, Jesus Walks and Runaway, and, I didn't know what to make of him just off of that. So, just after hearing all that, I was like, I'm just gonna dive in and just figure out for myself how I feel about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I got all the albums, and I just went through chronologically, starting with College Dropout, ending with Yeezus, and just went through and just listened over the period of, 1 or 2 weeks, and just took it all in, I'm glad I did, and I think tracking his journey is helpful, I think I was a little confused at first, because College Dropout and Late Registration are, what you guys have been talking about, I like them, but I had trouble with, I still didn't get, like, why people were saying this guy was a genius, why he was, like, the greatest producer alive, because for me, College Dropout and Late Registration are solid hip-hop albums, but that's kind of all they were to me, and to a degree, I still feel that way outside of certain tracks, but I think those are merely really good hip-hop albums. And I think after those is when he really graduated to, you know, the Kanye that we know now. And the Kanye that I got, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was, I will say that there was one key song where, because I listened to all of College Dropout, liked it, and then on Late Registration, for most of it, I was still like, yeah, it kind of more the same. But then Addiction came, and that one kind of snuck up on me. Really only for musical reasons, just because I think the beat and the sample and everything is really unbelievable on that song. But then you get to Diamonds from Sierra Leone, and that was the moment for me. That was when I was like, okay, I get it. That was right there. Like, seriously, the first time I listened to that song, I just started thinking about him in a different way. I started thinking about hip-hop in a different way, sampling, everything. Like, that song just kind of blew me away.
That's awesome.
And what about it in particular? I mean, I remember actually messaging you about it. I should have pulled that up. Like, just read it and you don't have to say it.
No, well, okay. The thing for me about that song was the contrast between the sample that he chose and the lyrics that he's rapping. Using the Shirley Bassey "Diamonds Are Forever" sample, which is the song, sort of, you know, it's like it's a lament about her relationships and men and everything, but it's also extolling the virtues of diamonds and how they'll last forever and how they'll never fade even when her men do. Mm-hmm. But then Kanye comes in with this line about where diamonds come from and how, you know, like conflict diamonds in Sierra Leone, and how that connects to his life and what he's going through. I have the verse, if I can just read it if you want.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was like the verse where he says, though it's thousands of miles away, Sierra Leone connects to what we go through today. Over here it's a drug trade, we die from drugs. Over there they die from what we buy from drugs. The diamonds, the chains, the bracelets, the charms is. I thought my Jesus piece was so harmless, till I seen a picture of a shorty armless, and here's the conflict. It's in a black person's soul to rock that gold. Spend your whole life trying to get that ice. Bought a polo rugby, it looks so nice. How can something so wrong make me feel so right? That fucking verse I just felt like my head exploded or something. Just the contrast between that and using the pop culture significance of that sample, connecting those two contrasts through a verse where he's talking about how what he's going through is connected to what these other people are going through in this other part of the world and the problems in that whole cycle. It's unbelievably connected and cyclical, and it's like a perfect match of form and content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've talked about like a lot of his songs not being great, I still think it's something he does pretty consistently, like even on his first album. I think he's like very conscious of the beats he samples, and even more so in his own album, because I can think of stuff like I feel like the stuff he does with like Jay-Z isn't always like that. And it probably isn't really like that until Blueprint 3, but, like, I just feel like sometimes he's, like, with Jay-Z, he's on, like, robot mode. Like, it's just repeating, like, soul music, like, over and over, and it, like, doesn't really connect. But you're right. Well, like, something like Sierra Leone, like, it's undeniable, like, what he's doing. Like, it's there's a theme coming out of his samples that's really impressive.
Right, and that's what did it. Because I'll say, like, before Kanye, I came from... My background was, I was really into, like, underground hip-hop. I was one of those, like, stupid people that was, you know, all against, like, pop music and pop rap, and I wasn't into any of that, and I was, like, I thought I was, you know, so much better with my, you know, Jedi mind tricks and Nas and all that, whatever. And then, the first two albums, I was like, yeah, you know, it's good, but the samples and the beats and everything don't really sound that different from, like, what Snoop, the Enemy of Mankind, did with Jedi Mind Tricks, with that, you know, like, chipmunk soul sound and everything. And then I thought, you know, again, from, like, the stupid person background, where, yeah, like, I was so caught up in this idea of hip-hop as, like, this binary thing, where it's, like, beat and rapping, and how good is the rap, how good is the beat, and, you know, like, just as, like, these two separate things, where it's, like, the beat just had to sound good, and it didn't really matter if it was connected to what was being said through the song, and all I really cared about in the raps was just, like, technical flow and stuff, which, looking back, is so empty, and, I mean, I can still listen to and appreciate a really amazing flow, and I can still listen to, you know, and appreciate, you know, really good beats musically. I love that stuff, but... When I got to Sierra Leone, I was like, oh, shit, th- this can be so much more than how I was thinking of it.
Yeah.
This can be, you know, you can express things through music just like you could through a movie or, you know, any other form of art. It's these ideas and themes. I don't know. I feel so stupid for not getting it for so long, you know, but it really kind of changed, and not to sound like dramatic, but it kind of changed my life. I mean, just it's something that I love as much as music to just all of a sudden see it so with such like new eyes, and everything just starts to sound and feel different after you have that, you know?
Yeah, he kind of ruined like music for me, like period, for a while.
Exactly.
Like, other people aren't doing this, god damn.
Right.
Yeah, I've been like crippled musically for a long time because I just don't find anything that's sort of on the level of depth that Kanye has. Like, I'll go back and listen to like Black Star's album and like Kendrick stuff and be like, okay, this is getting at the fullness that I want from music, but it's hard to like listen to rock music that's not doing that, to like other hip hop music that's not doing that, to just standard pop. Like I've found myself like going back to a lot of classical music just to like get that sort of depth of what's going on.
And I will say, like, right now I'm in a phase where I think Kanye was sort of like this gateway drug where I started getting into, he kind of, because he changed the way I look at stuff, now I've been going in and listening to a lot of other pop music and, you know, stuff just I wrote off before. And I'm going through a phase right now, especially where I'm listening to a lot of pop, like Lady Gaga, Beyonce, Kesha, all that stuff, which is, most of which is I love, but there's so much stuff in pop where they deliver very overt social messages, which is fine, and I'm glad they're doing it, but when I'm listening to it, it's so much less interesting than the way someone like Kanye does it, where it's not always so overt, and it's much more tied into him and his personality and what he goes through, and he creates parallels between himself and these larger themes that he wants to explore, which to me is so much more mature and complex than just talking about, you know, equality and feminism and stuff, which is all great, and I agree with all that stuff, but it's just there's a level of didacticism when you're dealing with it overtly that I don't get from Kanye.
I feel like you're referring to like Beyonce, because
yeah.
That's how I've always felt about her in like her best albums. I'm kind of like, man, like
I full disclosure, I just listened to her self-titled album for the first time today, and that's fresh on my mind right now. And it was a very frustrating experience for me.
Yeah, I like some of the stuff in that album. Like, I think her takes on, like, she presents love, I think, in a way, like, in a mature way, and that's kind of refreshing. But at the same time, like, the feminist stuff, like, it's so blunt and on the nose and self-aggrandizing and everything. Like, I almost, like, can't. It doesn't make me cringe, but at the same time, I guess I'm, like, kind of bored by it. Like, I couldn't care.
It's just another thing where it's like I said, you know, I'm glad that she's doing it. I'm glad that somebody with her, you know, mainstream fame is out there just giving these, you know, blatantly and, you know, overtly feminist messages, actually even using the word, which is rare. And that's great and that's awesome. But when you're coming from a spotlight, you know, like I am, where I already, like, understand this stuff and I agree with her already, listening to those messages starts to feel just really unengaging and very, just boring. I feel like I've got this. Like, what's the next step? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that gets into the thing of wanting different markets isn't the right word, but various voices. Like, Beyonce probably needs to be the voice that's being overt because she has the popularity and can hammer the message home. But that means that there is room for an artist that's going to come in and do what Kanye's doing. Like, Kanye could let Jay-Z do all the, like, I have money and bitches and hoes, and he can come in and deliver, like art in a way that nobody else
is. Something pointed, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it also doesn't help her case that, not only that, but there are other artists out there, at the same time she is exploring similar themes in, I think, more interesting, entertaining, engaging ways. Like, I think Miley Cyrus and Nicki Minaj are much more interesting, you know, feminist artists out there right now, for me. It's because they're, it's dealing with it overtly, but it's also dealing with it more confidently, with a more, I think I just respond to the whole sort of punk rock aesthetic that they project. which there's like a defiance and a humor to it that I don't get from Beyonce.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that. And you're making a great point about like pop music in general and how it's able to kind of capture that energy that Kanye has. I actually feel that way about Kesha. Like,
oh, yeah.
I would compare like a Kesha album to a Beyonce album. Ask you to like really listen to the music going on and like how it really feeds in. Because I think Kesha, like, I'm with you. I'm on a pop kick and I'm listening to like Animal and stuff. And
oh yeah.
I think like there's personality to the music that lends to like a greater story kind of going on throughout the album. Like,
right.
There's defiance. There's like this general attitude towards like these like gender politics, and like there's a fierceness to it that I don't think like needs to be stated like actively at every
exactly.
song like Beyonce kind of does.
I think and maybe this is subjective, but for me, when I listen to Kesha or Nicki Minaj, there's such a personality that comes through. Or same thing with Miley Cyrus, where I feel like Beyonce, I don't really get so much of that personality. With Beyonce, I get more just the overt themes and these, you know, ideas about love and about sex and about feminism and all that stuff. But I don't get the personal narrative. I don't get the personal struggle, which I think is a much more persuasive case for feminism, because you're listening to a powerful woman exert her personality when you're listening to Kesha or Nicki Minaj or Miley Cyrus. And I think with Beyonce, that feels very manufactured to me. It feels like she's trying so hard to tell you that about herself and what she believes in, that it just doesn't come through naturally. You wind up hearing the point and not the artist. You know what I mean? And where with someone like Kesha, she just has so much natural charisma and personality that that is what comes through, and then that's the strength that registers. She doesn't need to tell you she's strong all the time because you can hear it when she sings.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like it's almost the difference between like Beyonce sort of set up like a superhero like Superman, where it's this sort of ideal that really isn't achievable by anyone, but that doesn't mean, like, what she's singing about is an ideal that, or like this persona that people can look to be at like the top upper tier,
yeah.
Where the other artists are more of a Peter Parker, Spider-Man kind of real person, real struggles, like flawed and has weaknesses kind of.
Right.
Yeah,
and not afraid to have fun with it, and that is such a lacking part in like the Beyonce thing, where it feels so serious all the time, you know.
Kanye has fun.
Oh hell yeah!
Kanye does have fun.
Her new workout plan.
Oh, God.
Such a weird song.
I can't wait to talk about that song.
Well, so you loving Diamonds for Sierra Leone. Did it blow your mind when you then heard Blood on the Leaves? Was that the next evolution?
Yeah. Well, I mean, by the time I got there, I'd heard, you know, his other stuff, and I'd kind of fallen in love. So I was kind of, you know, already on board with that whole thing. But yeah, I mean, Blood on the Leaves, the choice of sample in that song is really devastating, honestly. I mean, that's something, I'm sure we'll talk about it. I know you guys are going to talk about it. But that's something about Yeezus, that whole album, that there's so many ways that you can listen to it, where I feel like a song like Blood on the Leaves, or any song on that album, if you can sit down and really listen to it intently and just feel kind of emotionally destroyed, you know what I mean? I don't know if I'd say profound. I think it's profound, but it has like this really almost debilitating effect, because there's so much power and despair and you know, social analysis and what he's talking about. But at the same time, you could also just play that song, you know, play that album when you're driving in your car and turn it up and just rock out. And I don't think I can name 10 albums that I feel that way about. You know what I mean? That can do both depending on how you're feeling.
Yeah, like, I love driving and listening to, like, Can't Hold My Liquor. But then if I, like, were to sit there and listen to Can't Hold My Liquor, I'd maybe start to cry for both people involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
I was about to mention Can't Hold My Liquor, because I always thought that was the most devastating song on the album, and in a lot of ways it is. But in the context of the album, it becomes a lot more devastating, which is why Yeezus still blows my mind, and why I'm turning off albums like halfway through half the time, because like I'm not getting this giant narrative building throughout, and these songs are gaining emphasis like in the middle all of a sudden because of the song surrounding it. And I've kind of grown to love Blood in the Leaves that way, where that song really is kind of, like, heartbreaking on the album. And to see him switch, like, there's a dichotomy in the song where you have the beginning that's kind of soft and somber, and then it gets fierce, and he's, like, yelling at, like, Jay-Z and everything. Like, you could just feel, like, the character in that album, like, gaining personality and, like, transforming, and it's crazy. Like, it's so, like, it makes me feel human. Like, I connect with it so much.
I'm tempted to say at this point for me that the most emotional, devastating tracks, even though Hold My Liquor is my favorite, I think I Am a God and I'm In It tend to be the ones me are the most, that hit me the hardest. And I think it's just because the anguish that he's expressing through that character, you can feel it. You can feel what that character is feeling, and that just through little lines and touches that he does musically.
Yeah, I would say I Am a God's probably one of the most misunderstood songs.
Oh yeah,
songs ever.
Yeah, yep. It just, everybody thinks it's him being like, it's more braggadocio, but it's actually just, it's high irony. It's his character breaking down.
Yep.
Oh.
Literally, by the end.
Yeah, it devolves into screams.
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy. You don't hear not even just rap music, you don't hear music doing that. Like, especially someone like Kanye, who's won Album of the Year, who, like, can pretty much, like, do whatever he wants, can probably make radio hits for the rest of his life if he really wants to, but no, he's making something like this, where, like, he's running through the streets and, like, screaming, and, like, it's fucking nuts.
Right, like, how can you just say that song is just braggadocio and him literally saying that he's a god and, you know, the greatest ever, like, 1,000 other rap songs, when it ends with him screaming like he's trapped, like he can't escape from what he's created? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and plus, the contrast between saying, like, I am a god, and then he keeps asking people for things, and as far as we know, none of them are delivered. Like, he can't even get fucking croissants. Like,
where's my damn menage?
Yeah, it's amazing. God, Yeezus is so fucking good.
Yeah, it is.
Wow, I didn't think we'd ever get into Yeezus before, but this is good. It feels
good. You're welcome.
I've been waiting so long.
I can feel it. Like, when I'm listening to you guys talk about Collins Dropout, I'm like, you're just dying right now, aren't you? Just waiting to bust out of this.
Yeah.
It's a little torturous.
Because 808's going to be the first, like, really exciting full album for me. I guess not so much for Travis, but...
You should not be skipping Graduation.
Well, Graduation for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to skip, but...
No, I mean, you shouldn't be saying that'll be the first interesting one, because Graduation is fantastic.
Yeah, I need to go back through... Graduation's the one album that's never, like resonated with me. And maybe that's just because I spent so long... I had never really appreciated Kanye's first three albums until, like, last year, year and a half ago. And then I finally went back and re-listened and was like, what the fuck was I thinking? But Graduation was still the one where there were still, like, songs on it where I was like, yeah, this is phenomenal. But then there were more so where I was just, like, overall with the album, like, eh.
Yeah, so maybe going through that and 808s will be good for us, because I think that album, and you'll realize it once we get through it, but... Me, personally, I hear a thematic storyline throughout that album.
Yep.
That I think is the first time he does it, the first glimpse we get it from him. And it kind of starts with this, like, good morning, like, graduation sort of thing, and kind of ends with, it's this journey about him, like, going away from home and getting sucked up in, like, the stardom, and then realizing how, like, debilitating it can be, and then trying to go back home. Okay. And sort of being denied, and then going back to Jay-Z, where it's just where it all started, and, like, kind of the fallout of them. Like, it all adds up to me somehow in this very, like, not a linear storyline, but a thematic one that tells a story about a character. It's probably the most personal one I think he's made.
Okay.
Because I think he gets into, like, these characters he creates more in the other albums.
I think a lot of people might disagree with the statement, but, I mean, for me, I consider Graduation... like, the birth of Kanye as we know him now.
Nice, because I...
Shooting out of that cannon.
yeah, it's right there.
I missed the narrative stuff, because I just heard, like... To me, it was the album that had the most, like, just bragging, like, superficial bragging. But I didn't pick up on that context of, the bragging's part of the narrative. The same way in Yeezus, there's like a couple sections where like the bragging's part of the narrative.
I realized it actually when I heard Drunken Hot Girls, which forever I was like, that's the worst Kanye song. Like, that's terrible.
I'm still kind of there.
But
not the worst. But.
Right. It's this weird case where, like, I may not love the song, but I kind of love it on the album. And if you listen to it, like, with the right set of ears, like, maybe it's just how I listen to it now, it sounds a little ironic. It sounds like he's not really bragging about Drunken Hot Girls. It kind of sounds like it should be amazing. Like, Drunken Hot Girl, like, this is great. But the way he's seen it is almost like it's, like, sad and tragic. And somebody who thought it would be amazing but is, like, kind of bored with it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I get from it, like, thematic, like, the storyline thematically. Like, I feel like it's moving through a character somehow.
Okay, so he's recognizing, like, the hollowness of it.
I think so. I guess we'll find out when we listen to it and talk about it.
Yeah.
There's one line at the beginning on the first song on that album, the Good Morning, I think that's what it's called, that set up, that was the first seed for me, that set up, I think, what is maybe, to me, the most fascinating theme in all of Kanye's art, which is this idea of what, like, wealth and fame and braggadocio, all that stuff, means to, like, you know, the black experience in America and hip-hop, and also feel, and then as he gets to Yeezus, starting to feel, now that he's attained it, now is starting to feel dissatisfied even by that, which is at the beginning when he says, I'm like the flying Malcolm X by any jeans necessary. Which he, the way he is tying in fashion to civil rights right there, that was like another moment for me where I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Where, you know what I mean? Just stuff started to make sense to me. And it also probably helped that a little bit before this, I was reading The Resistance by Armand White, which is an amazing book. But he also, he talks a lot about, you know, like 80s and 90s hip hop in that book. And he just—that's one of the themes that book really clarified for me—is this idea of, you know, because even though I liked rap a lot, I never really understood the social context of all that bravado, you know, which is something people always bag on rap and rappers for. So they're so, you know, egotistical and whatever. But it's like there's a reason for that, you know what I mean? There's a reason when you're. When your whole people is oppressed by a society, you are expressing yourself and finding your self-worth in things that you can control. So when you think that you're an amazing rapper, when you have, you know, tons of money, when you have, you know, all this swag and bling, whatever, that's a way of saying, you know, despite whatever you think of me, I'm here, I'm succeeding, I'm successful, you cannot hold me down, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was a huge insight for me. And once I got that, you know, everything started to make sense. And then for Kanye to, you know, actually tie that into civil rights in such a concrete way like that. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll get to it with Yeezus and everything later. But yeah, just that the way he says, yeah, I got that. But now even that's not enough. That's amazing. And I think that's a level of self-analysis and introspection that I don't get from a lot of other hip-hop. Or I don't think really any hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you mentioned the kind of mixing of, like, the Malcolm X by Any Jeans Necessary. Like, that's one of the moments I fell in love with I'm In It, when he says,
oh, that's the best line on
put my fist in her like a civil rights sign.
Fuck yeah.
He, to me, like, well, I think the best line in the album is when he says, Jesus just rose again, which is hilarious to me. But even, and both those lines really, like, there's this mix, like, there's this rawness, like, to the political message he has throughout the album, and at the same time, like, you have this, like, theme of sexual addiction, and he combines both of those in this moment, and I'm like, oh my fucking god, like, this guy is building, like, all of this imagery and themes throughout the album and, like, culminating it with this line. Like, nobody is doing this.
And not just culminating with the line, but he builds up all of that sexual bravado throughout the song, and then the chorus is, I'm in it and I can't get out.
Right.
The, adding that I can't get out is such a clarifying, you know, piece of context that, again, I feel like a lot of other artists are not going that level. They're getting that first level, but then they're not willing to go further and question, you know, what that actually means.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's fucking beautiful. God.
Like, there's not just, there aren't just, you know, a narrative and thematic arc to the albums, but it, all the albums put together makes a larger one. Like, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's the most exciting part for me doing all this, is kind of watching Kanye's growth as an artist and really seeing, like, individual songs, like, taking it down to, like, an atomic level and seeing, like, how he shifts in, like, perspectives and how he, like, grows in the way he talks about elitism and brands and, like, it just fascinates me. Like, building up all the way to All Day, I'm like, holy shit, like, compare All Day to something like We Don't Care. Like, right. The way he's talking about fashion and, like, the power it holds over kids, like, it's crazy, like, where he's gone with that stuff.
I think that, and again, there's, for me, there's one line in All Day, which I think is the real, I think is going to be a hint of a big theme on the album, and is a big, it, for me, it's like the logical next step after Yeezus, after the way Yeezus questions all of that, you know, bravado stuff in a personal way, where he says that, which for me is maybe my favorite line in any Kanye song, or very close to it, which is the, like a light-skinned slave boy, we in the motherfucking house, which is crazy. Like, this idea of that, yeah, that it's almost, to me, it's almost like hinting at this idea of that, you know, Kanye and is, like, being accepted now by, like, this mainstream, sort of, in a way, white culture as this, you know, amazing artist or whatever. But at the same time, it's like there's, it's still underneath this system of oppression by being in there. You know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's really funny. Those are all themes we've talked about. And there's, like, especially the first three songs on College Dropout, it's very heavy on that stuff. And this sort of defeat he has, like, on there, and, like, even when he's, like, working at the Gap, like, that's the way he feels. Like, it's great, and I think we've talked about, like, that's what makes us sort of relate to him a lot more than most hip-hop artists. Like, I don't know, I've been trying really hard to like Jay-Z, as we've covered in this podcast, and I have trouble with it, like, not just because he's somebody who seems about being in the streets, but, like, just the way he talks about himself, and then the context of himself. And not in any sort of, like, narrative form. Like, sometimes he gets into narrative stuff, but, like, not in the way Kanye does, and not in the way it's sectioned and structured. It's crazy, and it drives me nuts that people don't get it.
And I think there, I mean, I don't know, and I have trouble with not just Jay-Z, but a lot of rap that is still, you know, that modern rap that is talking about, like, the streets and ghetto life and stuff. And it's not because that it's not valid, of course. It's just that I think that there's so much, like, the stuff in the 90s already covered so much of that stuff in so much clarity and depth that now I kind of feel like, again, it kind of brings me back to, like, the Beyonce thing of feminism. It's like, well, what's the next step now? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, at what point are we just, you know, going over the same ground as someone like Nas covered on Illmatic? I mean, for, like, when I was a kid, like, first getting into hip-hop, Life's a Bish was, like, the one of the most, like, amazing moments of my life. Because, you know, I came from, like, middle of nowhere, small town in the Midwest. I was so far from this life, you know what I mean? I had no understanding of what that kind of life was like. And then to listen to Nas talk about life in the ghetto and Life's a Bitch, and not just you know, what you're used to hearing about life, like the crime and the guns and the drugs and whatever, but to give, like, a reason why, just by saying, you know, basically this idea that, you know, you feel like everyone around you is dying and you're going to die tomorrow anyway, so what does it matter what we do? This idea of you know, this expressing why life feels cheap and why this sort of nihilism happens, you know, in this, like, personal, sociological way, that for me, again, as a kid, I was like, that was, like, the first real moment of insight I got in from really almost any piece of music. That was one of the big ones for me. That was a totally off-topic tangent. But
we want to know your story, eh? It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all feeds into it, because, I mean, that was something that you connected with insightful music early on, and then found yourself sort of in a, like, a, not a desert, but, like, a, just a repetitious landscape where it's like, I'm waiting for something new, and then to find something like what Kanye's doing, it really expresses how there is a need for artists to move beyond what other people are currently talking about.
Right.
It'd be like,
right.
You know, every painter does a still life at some point. And because it's such a common theme, you get to see that the style shift. Like, Escher's still life is different than Picasso's still life. But that doesn't mean that painters should continually paint still lifes, right? Like, you need Escher and Picasso to move beyond that and to paint the things that are, like, most important to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And maybe Jay-Z is, like, the epitome of that, like, braggadocio, but we need other people to do other music and talk about other things, where I feel like a lot of hip-hop artists just think, like, that's what they need to say, like, how they have guns, how they have money, how they have jewels, when, no, like, if Drake's going to be, like, a little emotional guy, you need Drake to be the little emotional guy. Like,
but, and this is why, you know, I think it's so important for artists and critics, too, to be, you know, art literate. Because if you don't know, you know, what's preceded you, how are you going to know where to go? Like, how are you going to know what you're saying is anything new or insightful? If you don't know what's been said before, you know what I mean? And that's why, I think that's another subject, but, you know, I think that's an important thing to have when you're making and understanding art.
Yeah, and I think that's what we've said about Kanye, actually. Like, he was saying stuff we had never heard before. Like, how many rappers, like, rapped about working at the Gap? Like, that's kind of simple and, like, maybe a little superficial, but, like, at the same time, like, I've never heard that. Like, that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that gets at some of the beauty of, like, I'm forgetting the track name on 808, where he talks about, like, Welcome to Heartbreak, where he's just, like, you know, he's getting shown pictures of his friend's kids, and all he could show is pictures of his cribs. Like, he's bragging, but looking at, like, the hollowness of that life in a way that, like, I don't think other people...
Right. The delivery and context of that line seems like reversed from what you'd hear from most songs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a downward energy rather than an upward energy.
Right.
Well, VMAs.
I guess we should talk about the VMAs.
Great, all great. Most of it was great. Almost all of it was great.
I wasn't into a lot of the performances, actually.
It was about 50-50 for me, I think.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, the ones I liked were not the ones I was expecting to like.
Yeah.
Demi Lovato, I even liked Nick Jonas. Like, I'm into that song, and I think he's doing some cool stuff.
You guys, I just need to admit that, within, like, 3 or 4 days after I got it, Cool for the Summer was the number one most played song on my iPod of all time. I think I listened to it like 100 times, literally. So,
yeah. I've been listening to it a lot too. It's a great song.
I just there are times when I'll just sit at my desk, do whatever, and I'll just have it literally on repeat for like 2 hours at a time. It's amazing.
I love the little guitar riff in it.
I haven't heard the song.
It's all. Oh my god, you're missing out, man.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on the lame end of things.
The Nicki Minaj performance is pretty great, too.
I thought it was good, but I wasn't into Taylor coming out. It, like, made it into a different thing, like beef or whatever, and it was just, right. It felt stupid and manufactured to me.
I agree. But that's probably colored by my feelings on Taylor Swift, but...
Yeah, I'm not crazy about her. I'm okay with some stuff on 1989, but I don't think she's ever made, like, a good album. But I guess we should talk about Kanye at the VMAs.
He was really digging The Weeknd.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't actually watch the entire thing. I just watched performances and speeches and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a video that's been circulating of, like, Kanye dancing to The Weeknd.
Yep.
He, like, just stood up and started dancing while everybody else is just sitting. What I really liked was that I watched Kim's face carefully, and she never once showed, like... unease or displeasure. Like, she did show that she was, like, excited, but she kept, like, a neutral, like, yeah, Kanye's doing Kanye things. That made me happy. I feel like he's taken care of.
Maybe we should do Kim Kardashian updates on here.
I'm surprised you haven't been, honestly.
Yeah, what have we been thinking?
A lot of the Northwest news ends up being Kim Kardashian news, I feel like.
That matching outfit one? Adorable.
Oh, that's our... Don't spoil our Northwest updates.
Oh, sorry, guys.
You know, I haven't listened to Kanye's speech or read it.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Dude, we do a Kanye West podcast.
I know.
We should probably stop this right now.
I know. Part of me was, like, really nervous because I just heard he gave a speech and people are like, it's weird. And I was just like, oh, no, I'm nervous.
It's and unbelievable.
Then I haven't gone back and listened to it.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
I think my favorite part was that it begins with, like, 3 minutes of just silence, just standing there listening to cheers.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty amazing.
I was saying this before the podcast, but I hadn't seen the video. I'd only, because I don't have TV and everything, and I couldn't find a way to, you know, get it online. So I read the speech the next morning, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, this is, like, fucking great. Like, it's so poignant and so, like, down to earth, and it's stuff, like, you don't hear people from his position usually saying. Like, it's not, like, politically correct. It's not, like, safe. Like, it's really out there, and it's calling people out and saying what he thinks, and I loved it. And when I read it on paper, it doesn't read like a Kanye West speech. It's, like, sort of, it's very focused, and it might jump around a little bit, but it still gets at a larger point, and then there's, like, a narrative to it. And then I listened to him give the speech, and I kind of got what people were saying. It's really random and sporadic, like, in the way he's delivering it, and it made me, like, think, like, okay, this is why.
Oh, God.
Yes, they're done.
Oh, I think Chris got it. Oh, dude, it's, like, 13 minutes long.
Yeah,
you probably should. I was trying to read the transcripts, and, yeah, that's, the audio video, or auto video.
I like it.
It's pure it's just completely unfiltered stream of consciousness honesty. It's incredible. Did you read, like, the backstory of what he was supposed to do at the show?
I have no idea, actually.
Okay, so, they thought he was going to perform. Like, he was originally going to perform a medley of songs.
Oh.
And right, I guess, seriously, like, minutes before he was about to be presented, he just told them, no, I don't want to do that anymore, I'm just going to talk. So, this was completely unplanned. Like, he just walked up there and just started talking instead.
That's awesome.
That is great, although I want to hear that medley.
Oh, I know. I was actually really disappointed, because I thought he was going to perform at some point, too, and that never happened.
Damn, I did, too. I even told my girlfriend that. I was like, he's going to do it medley. Like, they do it every year now. He's going to be him.
It was okay, though, just because I love the whole show. I don't know. I don't know how deeply we want to get into that whole thing, but there's a lot going on for me at that show.
Well, we could definitely get into it.
You sure?
I don't give a shit. Like, I mean, we can keep talking about Kanye's speech, or we can talk about Miley. Like, I don't know. What do you think about the Nicki Miley thing? Do you think it was real?
From what I've heard, it was, and it seemed real. I saw, like, what she said about Nicki right before, which I don't... even though, guys, I'm totally Team Miley, but I'm not really on her side. I think she kind of missed the point of that whole thing.
Oh, yeah, it was completely stupid.
Yeah, which it pains me to say because I love her, but oh well. But, yeah, I had, like, a big... I don't know. I've been going through a real epiphany lately with pop culture and how I fit into all of it. I don't know. There's a lot happening for me at that show.
What about Miley, like, really speaks to you?
It's something... It's not just her. It's, like, the whole larger pop culture at the moment and, like, youth culture. Because, well, just, like, the background. Like, when I... My whole life growing up, I've always been like this. It sounds so stupid to say, but, like, you know, an outsider, I guess. And I hate when people say that, but I just, like, when I was, you know, when I was in high school and everything, I was like a goth in high school, and I just listened to, like, grunge music and Radiohead, and then I got really into metal, and I'm still really into metal somewhat. But I never felt like I could relate to the majority of people and people my age and what was going on in the culture, you know, I just felt like I didn't get it. Like, that wasn't me. Like, I couldn't relate to the kind of music and new movies and fashion and stuff people were into, right?
Right.
And lately, I've been finding this weird thing where I feel like I'm reversing, where now I'm struggling to relate to, like, the alternative culture. Yeah. And all of a sudden, like, all the stuff in the alternative culture just feels really uninteresting to me. Like, the music, like, a lot of alternative music and everything I'm not connecting with what's coming out now. Like, it all feels very safe and stale to me. And then all of a sudden, I'm finding when I'm listening to, like, Miley Cyrus, Kanye West, and I'm watching the VMAs, and I'm seeing all these, like, young people, like, have, you know, talk about their beliefs and themselves and how they want the world to be and how they're using their platform to, and, you know, not that artists haven't used their platform to, you know, say important things forever, but just, I don't know, when I'm hearing just someone like Miley Cyrus talk about, you know, transgender, gay, bisexual acceptance and equality and but in a way that's also not being, like, politically correct about it necessarily, where she's also just being really, like, defiant with her sexuality and her personality. And the way that all that stuff is connected, and it's connected into the art that they're making also, I for the first time, I feel like I get this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is, I can relate to this. This is something I feel like I can and want to be a part of, yeah. Which is really like a new weird thing for me, because I've literally never felt this my entire life.
Oh my
so.
God. I feel like you're saying, I feel the exact same way. It's been happening to me the last, like, couple years too. And I don't know why, like I'll tell my friends, like, yeah, I love the new, like, Carly Rae song or something. And they look at me like I'm a fucking moron. Like, what are you talking about? Like, they're a lot of my friends aren't at that stage. And maybe it's just some way, like, our worldviews, like, we won't ever be at that level, but, like, I've had that shift where I went from, like, the sort of alternative indie stuff where I was like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to like, this is different, this is what, like, you get into when you, like, reach, like, 20 or whatever, and, like, that was kind of, like, my journey. I never really got into, like, music or movies until, like, I got to college, but I have had this shift where, and I agree with you. I feel that the VMAs, like, there's this presence, like, this collective
right.
presence. And Kanye even gets at it. He says, like, listen to the kids. Like,
yes.
I think he gets it, too. And I think
right.
maybe that's – I wonder if that's fueled the, like, the direction
well,
of his music or something. Like,
he pretty much, like, blatantly said it. He's like, you know, we're the millennials, and we're not going to teach our kids to feel bad about themselves like our parents did, you know? I mean – That's the thing. Like, it's such an extreme shift for me when I think about it. Because I mean, when I was in high school, I mean, I was pretty much a flat out misanthrope. Like,
yeah.
I hated everybody. I hated everything. And I hated being around people. And all I wanted to do was just be by myself and with my girlfriend. And that was it. You know. And like, I would just watch, like, you know, it was really just like the goriest horror movies I could find and stuff. Because it felt like a release or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just. It was just, like, it was bad. But now, it's like, I've gone from wanting to just, like, separate myself to all of a sudden feeling like I can't live that way. Like, I feel like I care. I've started to just, like, care about people and the world and the state the world and people are in. And I care about how other people feel. And I care about how I fit in with you know, society, not fit in, but how I'm connected to it. And I can't live with just isolating myself anymore. Like, I feel like I have to be a part of it because I'm a part of it whether I want to be or not, which is something I never understood or cared about before. And now the weird thing is, like, what I was talking earlier about how, like, in hip hop and black music, you know, there's this whole sense of self-empowerment because you have to empower yourself because society is not going to do that for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, now I feel like the stuff, the art that I tend to be able to relate to and find meaning in is stuff that comes from, like from a black background or from, like, a feminist background. Backgrounds where the artists feel like they are their own power. They are their own, you know, inspiration, and they have to make that themselves because, like I said, the world's not going to. But like all the music I came from, like all this rock and metal and stuff, it comes from a very generally a very like white place, right? And I realized a while ago, excuse me, where if you know, like the stuff from the classes that are being oppressed, you know, like music from women and music from you know, minorities, if that stuff is self-empowerment, well, then what is the white stuff, right? Like, the white stuff is basically this music that's coming from this sort of ruling class. And if you look at, you know, a lot of white music, a lot of rock music, there's such a sense of self-loathing pervading all of it. Like, all the stuff that was big in the 90s, like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and all that stuff, there's such a sense of just hatred for yourself and this darkness for how you feel about you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's just, it's very... kind of mopey, you know, and it's fine. I mean, that's valuable. I got a lot out of that when I was a teenager. But, like, when I listen to that stuff now, I feel like it's all still kind of in the same place. Like, it's coming from this place of ruling class ennui. And I feel like that's not interesting to me anymore. You know, like that, I don't feel worth or depth or importance from that anymore. That, it feels very narcissistic and very... aimless to me now, you know? I feel like I want to be a part of the other side. I want to be a part of the side that's saying, fuck that, you know, I have worth, and I don't care how you feel about me. I you know, like, all, like Nicki Minaj and Kanye talk about, you know, loving their haters, and their haters give them just as much inspiration as all the people that love them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like, you would never hear something like that in rock music, outside of, like, punk saying, you know, fuck authority or whatever, which is a different angle, you know? It's there's a sense of self and power in it that's just not there in the stuff that I used to like, and that I still like, but I can't, like, the new stuff that's coming out is coming from the same place, and I don't know, I'm having trouble relating to that side.
Right.
And it, I think too, like, a lot of the isolation or hermetic behavior that you talk about, like, in high school, it doesn't stem from, like, it still stems from, like, emotion, right? There's a lot
right.
of emotion, and probably, like, a little bit of a turning in as, like, a way to stop feeling so much.
Right.
And then you're at a place now where, like, you're not trying to resist that. You're at a point where you're able to sort of gush. You're wanting to, like, open yourself to the world, which is beautiful. And I think that does get at why pop music and why these empowered artists are very helpful. We're opposed to, you know, I'm thinking back to, like, my 90s listening to, like, Puddle of Mud and how,
right.
like,
dear Lord,
sad all those songs were, which makes me really think about, like, a band like Linkin Park and the range that there is in Linkin Park's music, from, like, very disenfranchised songs, like weak songs, to the empowered, like, we're not going to take this, or, like, I'm not going to abide by your rules kind of music. That's very interesting to me in this moment.
Yeah.
Right. It's just a matter of, you know, it's just that shift of learning to care about others and learning to not be detached and cynical. I think overcoming cynicism has been, like, one of the most important things that's ever happened to me. Because, I mean, cynicism is just, it's horrible. Like, it's a horrible way to go through life. And at the time, you know, it felt like the only thing that made sense to me. But now, looking back, it's such, like, a shallow way of living. And it's such a shallow way of relating to the world and people. Just this denial of genuine emotion and caring, and a denial of society, you know, as a group, a denial that, you know, people are part of one thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't just isolate yourself and just think that that's fine. You know what I mean? There are things that are more important than just you.
Yeah.
And that's like that has been a really amazing thing to come to terms with.
Yeah, it's a little ironic. I think it's really bold and, like, kind of egotistical to be that cynical and to look at
yes.
someone like Kanye, who's that huge, and say, like, that guy's full of shit. Like, he's huge, he can do whatever he wants, like, his speech makes no sense. Like, to me, that's the irony. Like, well, he actually is, like, being, like, really, like, passionate and, like, honest, and, like, he's speaking what it means. Like, your inability to, like, grasp it and, like, put
right.
yourself in this pedestal and think, like, he's just full of shit. Like, that to me is, like, the problem. Like, I don't understand why, like, fuck, I listened to whole Jay-Z's entire discography trying to figure that guy out. Like, I gave the guy a chance. Like, I get him, like, inside and out now. It doesn't mean I have to connect with his music, but I do, like, appreciate him on a different level, actually, now. And to me, like, I feel like that's what art is about. Like, I should be trying to figure out this person's worldviews and what they're trying to say. And that's, to me, like, going through Kanye's speech, like, I'm at this point where, like, I get it. Like, I know this guy, like, so well. Like, I know what he's saying, and it speaks to me in ways that, like, it's so beautiful to, like, understand someone on that level. And I've never even met the fucker. Well, only a few times.
I'd say, too, like, what Jordan's talking about with going from, like, a place of cynicism to wanting to open up to wanting to, like, to caring about people and wanting to care about people. That's probably why Yeezus resonates so much, because that's exactly the arc in Yeezus.
Right.
When you get to Bound 2, like, it's such a relief.
Yep.
To just, and for the character, too, because the character's finally, like, connected with somebody and has found, like, a place of, like, a sort of an oasis. And, he's receptive and open, which I think that's what we're getting at.
He's accepting and admitting what he needs.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is Kanye.
Yeah. Well, top five Kanye songs?
Oh, yeah. You got that list ready?
Yeah, I've got five here.
All right, let's do it. Number five.
Okay. Well, let me preface this by saying that this is an ever-shifting list, and it could be different in 2 weeks. But right now, I'm going to say number five, Runaway. Number four, On Sight. Number three, All Day. Number two, Power. And number one, Hold My Liquor.
Nice.
I like that. You know, On Sight is a song I don't think a lot of people appreciate either.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, thematically, and of course on the album too, but I think also just musically it's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love just turning it on. Like, if I'm at the gym or something, it's the best.
Yep.
Oh, God, I can't wait for the On Sight episode.
I was going to save it for the episode, but it's here. Like, one of my favorite, like, just flat-out memories is from that song. Because I remember, I don't know if you remember, Chris, but we were kind of freaking out when Yeezus dropped. We were texting each other.
Yeah.
And I was on my way to, like, a destination wedding. So I am, like, trying my hardest to, like, download this goddamn album, like, illegally. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to do it. Like, I got to hear it. And I get it on the bus, and the quality's, like, terrible. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, and I'm listening to it. I'm like, this album sucks. Like, bullshit. And I finally got, like, I got in a car, and I was able to put it on full blast. And I told my girlfriend, like, I have a surprise for you. And she had, like, no idea what it was going to be. And I turned on this song, because, like, we're both huge Kanye fans. And the song starts playing, and it sound, and, like, the clarity is a lot better. And it sounds incredible. And it's, like, big and loud. And then it's, you know, it's got the whole intro and everything. And then Kanye starts rapping, and she looks at me and is like, holy shit. Because we had been waiting so long for this album, and it was just, like, amazing. Like, we both, like, connected and, like, got Kanye, like, what he was doing and, like, the fun he was having with it, and, like, it was just so great. Like, that album to me, like, has, I just can't get over it. I haven't said this yet, but it's my favorite album ever.
Mine too. Yeah. And there's nothing else that sounds like it sonically.
Yeah.
I mean, it has precedence. Like, you know, everybody talks about Death Grips, which, yeah, it's similar territory. Mm-hmm. Or something like MIA's Maya, I think, is also sort of a precedent. But there's still, like, when I listen to it, the difference is something like Death Grips and Maya, those albums are so noisy and layered and big. And then Yeezus is, like, that a similar sound, but the opposite. It's, like, the most minimal, stripped-down, bare thing you could possibly get. And that, to me, makes it feel so much, in a way, so much more abrasive and aggressive than those other albums sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing I really love about the production, is, like, can't even, like, I don't have a way of putting it into words, like, but to me, it sounds like the production, like, is surrounding the character we're listening to. Mm-hmm. There's all this dead space kind of behind what's going on, because it is so minimalistic and everything. And it feels like a character, like, in a black room, basically, like, telling the story, and all these sounds going on around him are, like, what we're, like, experiencing through him, like, internally. Like, that's the only way I can describe it, and it really, like, puts me with the character in a way that I just can't think of with another album. It blows me away.
Have you guys read the Rick Rubin piece about the stuff that got deleted from those songs?
I think Chris, you told me about it.
Yeah. I read it
a
while ago.
Pretty crazy. I kind of want to hear those, but I can't imagine them any other way.
What was the song that leaked where it had the difference?
Bound 2.
It was Bound 2. Yeah. That, like, I liked what I was hearing from that. Bound 2 too.
The only one I remember is, like, that black skinhead had, like, crowd noise from a Little League game in it originally.
Of course it did.
Yeah. What, God, I was happy to hear All Day in there. For some reason, I have a lot of, like, weird feelings about All Day, but I adore All Day.
I just recently, I don't know why it took me so long, but in the last 2 weeks, I've realized how amazing it is and how much depth there is. And,
oh, yeah.
It's just, like, I can't stop listening to it now.
I know. And, again, it's a song that, again, sounds like nothing else I've ever heard before. Just, you know, it changes so many times. It becomes so many different things in the span of, like, 6 minutes. It's unbelievable.
God, yeah. The Broadway lines get me every time.
Man, and just, like, narratively, the way he's rapping that song is, like, I feel like that maybe that's something... He did it on Yeezus, but, like, the way, like, he kind of speeds up the way he's talking and who he's talking to and the anger that's building in his voice. Like, there's a narrative to the way he's rapping. And it feeds into his points and, like, kind of the emotion of it. And I can only imagine it's going to get even better on Swish. Like, because I think about songs on Yeezus, and I can't imagine them without being surrounded by those other songs. Like, it's become, like, a different thing to me. It's not just about the song. It's about this, like, entire experience that the album creates.
It's going to be cool.
I wonder if we're ever going to hear, like, the Excise tracks. I can't imagine how Yeezus would be with extra tracks or how they would even work outside of the context of that album.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, already looking at, on Swish, what he's given away. Like, Piss on Your Grave was supposed to be a track on Swish as it was originally envisioned, and now he gave that away to Travis Scott for Rodeo or Rodeo. And he had a song that he gave to, what's-his-face, Detroit guy.
Big Sean.
That was supposed to be on the album, and then he gave away the Rihanna track. So I'm really curious, because it seemed like with Yeezus, he just cut the stuff. But here he's giving away these songs that were supposed to be part of his album.
That is weird.
I don't know. I mean, I might regret saying this later, but right now, I feel pretty confident that Swish is probably going to be his best album. I mean, even just based on All Day, that right there is like, I mean, I just feel like he's been getting better and better as he goes anyway. So, I don't know. I have very little reason to doubt him right now.
Yeah, I
wouldn't be surprised if he just continued to top himself forever.
Right?
Yeah. Do you want to discuss least favorite album or least favorite song, or get into what's your top most, wait, Kanye, what moment?
Well, my least favorite is College Dropout. Least favorite song is probably See You in My Nightmares, but only because of that Lil Wayne verse.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I just can't get through it.
I feel like we've briefly discussed Lil Wayne. Every time we've said Lil Wayne's name, it's been with, like, that air. Been like, yeah, he's there sometimes.
I don't get it. I don't get him. Like, that voice is just, oh my god.
I don't even have a problem with his voice.
Just really?
Shit, he's saying.
You probably should have a problem with his voice.
Well, fine. No.
What, do you love that song, Chris?
No, I'm okay with it. I like it, whatever.
I need to listen to it again. I don't even... I do only think of Lil Wayne's part of that song.
Sans Lil Wayne, my favorite part... I'm sorry, my least favorite song is probably Heartless, which I have a real problem getting. I have problems with that song.
Interesting. Maybe we'll. You should come back for the Heartless discussion.
We actually, we should do that.
Yeah.
All right. I'll save it for then.
Okay. And then your wait, Kanye. What?
Oh jeez. I don't know. I hadn't really thought about a wait, Kanye. What? Moment.
Yeah, we popped it on you.
Yeah.
Didn't prepare you.
I don't know. Like for me, it's hard because it's almost like at this point everything Kanye does and says like makes sense in a weird way. Like it all fits in like the context of who he is and his whole narrative for me. I don't know. Like even stuff like his. Like the Taylor Swift interruption and everything, like it all like adds up to me. I don't know. I have a hard time like not getting something from him. Other than I don't know. I can't even like think of like a good throwaway line or anything right now.
Yeah, sometimes it is a struggle actually to come up with them when we're listening to the songs. I'm like, oh, this all sounds amazing. Like, like I don't know what to do.
I'll say this one, I guess, just because it's like the one line in a song that, I don't know, I can see the argument for it making sense, but it always kind of throws me for a loop when he says it, which is in Bound 2, when he says, ask me what I wish for on my wish list, you ever ask your bitch for other bitches, which seems like such a strange line in the context of, like, what that song is about. I don't know, I know you guys are going to talk about it later, but...
Like, oh my God, it's the last one we'll talk about.
That's true, yeah. Like 2 years from now.
No, it is strange in that context.
Right.
But I think it probably makes sense given, like, he's still flawed in a way. So it's like there's still hurdles to get over.
Yeah, you know what? I wonder if it feeds into, because I really want to talk about Bound 2 because for a long time, I had the idea that the song was a little bit ironic, and that it's almost kind of a subversion of, like, everything we're hearing in the album. Like, you get something like, it's all building up to Send It Up, and Send It Up is this, like, sort of him, you know, Jesus rose again. He's, like, back to God status. He believes in himself that way. And then it, like, switches the Bound 2, and to me, there's this sort of, I don't want to say a joke, but the way he's saying everything sounds like it's supposed to be ironic. And the way he says bound is almost like, I'm bound. Like, fuck, I met this girl at this party and sent it up, and now I'm, like, stuck with her because I knocked her up. So part of it is loving. Like, I get that and, like, how it could be part of that narrative. But part of me thinks, like, is it sort of a reverse in what he's doing and, like, sign of getting back at the, you know, how stardom isn't all it's cracked up to be, like, kind of the darker side of it and everything.
The funny thing is, the way that song plays out, because, you know, on the surface, it feels like it is just, like, you know, the journey from On Sight to Bound 2, where he's in love and admitting he needs something more than just what he had. But at the same time, when it has lines like that one I mentioned, and, like, what you're saying, Travis, where he's sort of... It's almost like he can't quite get there, or the song doesn't quite mean what it sounds like. It's, like, the way that makes me feel almost reminds me of the line, like, almost like that part in On Sight is foreshadowing, where he says, he'll give us what we need, may not be what we want. It, you know what I mean? It feels like it's operating along a similar wavelength, where it's like you think it's going to give you this thing that you're waiting for, or this thing that you feel like is what he's trying to say, but then he keeps throwing it off with other things that he says in that song, where it doesn't quite give you that cathartic satisfaction, which is, I don't know, that frustration is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's getting into... Because he says, like, I'll turn the plane around, like... There are a few lines in there...
I love that so much.
there's a few lines that show disconnect. And, Travis, you've had your theory about the Jerome's in the house line.
Yeah, right.
So there's definitely, like... It has depth to it. It's not an easy reading, which I think is what makes the album so interesting. Because you can't just listen to it and be like, oh, yeah, it's that straightforward. It's still, like... Reading,
and like, go ahead.
Oh, it's like reading Frost's Two Paths Diversion in Yellowwood. Like, people just think it means, like, I took the path less taken, it's made all the difference, when Frost actually meant that to be ironic. Like, it doesn't fucking matter what path you take, like, you just take a path.
Right. It's like every song on that album like almost seems to be the opposite of what it sounds like it means. You know, I mean,
right?
Like on site, like this super hard song about it, you know, it sounds on the surface almost like a sort of straightforward rap bravado song, but then like ending it with the laugh like he does just changes the whole meaning of that song. And like every song seems to have at least one little moment like that where it just, you think it means one thing, but he's really expressing the opposite. Mm-hmm. Which, and if you think about it that way, if his art to the end, like you were saying, is like we were talking about, if his, that final song is following the same pattern where it means like the opposite of what you think, then what the fuck does that? Man, it's like blowing my head open.
Well, the drums and the house line, maybe we should save it for the podcast, but again, there's something deeper to that line because it's getting at the show Martin and the character of Jerome, and it, like we said, like, there's just always something deeper, and there's, like, there are these, like, ideas building throughout where, like, that line starts to make difference. You see it in a different light when you consider, like, all the, like, the influences on the album and the pop culture, like, throughout it and how it's, like, influencing this character. Like, it just becomes a different line the way you're reading it and how you read into it. It's fucking... I mean, Jesus is so exhausting to talk about. Like, I can't believe we've got into it.
In the best way.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, Northwest news?
Well, Jordan already spoiled it. But,
sorry. Sorry, guys. I really fucked up. I'm so sorry.
we got this Northwest update from the same place we always get it from. What, I don't even remember the name of it anymore. Hollywood Life or something. But the headline is Northwest copies Daddy Kanye West's exact look with gray shirt and gold chain. Pictures to boot, you can find that on HollywoodLife.com.
Well worth seeking out.
It's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It is.
I like the idea that Northwest will grow up to not feel that she's pressured into gender-specific fashion like Jaden Smith.
And I love what Jaden's doing.
Yo, wait, have you listened to any of his recent raps?
I don't think I've listened to his rapping. I'm more into, like, his persona and, like, the crazy shit he's doing.
I can't tell you how excited I am for Jaden to drop, like, an album.
I need to listen to this.
I wouldn't even know how to process that.
Yeah, he's done some, like, raps this last year where he's just, like, released tracks where I've been, like, I'm legitimately into this. Like, I guess Gambino's a rapper that we didn't talk about at all that tends to have, like, themes and depth going on into a lot of his songs. And, like, Jaden reminded me of, like, somebody that's in that vein.
Yeah. I actually have never gotten into Charles Gambino. I need to do that.
I think we can all agree that we just need to hope that Northwest gets into the game someday.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, fuck. Could you imagine?
Oh, I can't.
She has to.
I can't even... I don't know why I pictured it like that fucking movie Underworld, where it's like the vampires and the lichens, and then they produce like a super vampire lichen. Or, like, you have like... fashion media savvy Kim with like fashion music savvy like Kanye creating like
my god,
that's gonna be like the final arc in Kanye's discography when his daughter's gonna join him on his like final album or something.
Oh, could you imagine a joint album between them?
Oh man,
I can, and I hope to God it happens.
Secretly, Kim spends the next 30 years developing a rap game. Kim's on the album too. What would they call it? The Yeezys?
Our story, A.
Our story. I think we just peaked. I think...
This is getting out of hand.
All right. What are we talking about next time?
Next episode, we should be talking about Get 'Em High.
Oh, thank God.
A song we both like a lot, I think.
Yeah, well, and Jordan, thank you for coming on. This was fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Yep, and podcast is Fifth Opinion.
Yeah, you can go to fifthopinionpod.com, and if you like Chris and Travis, they've both been on it.
Absolutely.
And
if you, like listening about Twilight, you got 5 episodes waiting for you.
Yeah. Maybe not the best way to entice people, but all right.
Yeah, Fifth Opinion really is like a roundtable discussion getting into a lot of movie. I mean, it's movie specific, so but it's
right.
analyzing movies in a way that, which is what we appreciate, not a lot of critics do, getting various opinions and ideas out there that typically just get like the solo opinion or maybe 2 people joking about a movie, but not sort of the layers and like various insights that you guys bring.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, and the whole idea is movies that we either disagree with each other or like the public and critics on. So movies that hopefully people can see them differently if they've written them off before.
Yeah, hopefully someday we can do a little joint marriage episode with Runaway.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, a much of a line movie with a lot of people, actually, so it fits in and everything.
And we've talked about doing it on Fifth Opinion on our own before, so yeah, that'd be great.
Yes. Yes.
I know nobody can see my eyes and my expression right now, but it's very intense. Alright, well, that does it. Goodbye, everyone.
Yay, bye.
Goodbye.
See ya.